Hi, folks. I'm George Corliss.
Hi, folks. I'm Jelaine Fetter.
And welcome to Good Growing with the Garden Gal. And this program will help you to become stewards of your own natural resources, whether you're a farmer, a backyard gardener, or you're into forestry or animal husbandry. Our goal is to provide information and education on these subjects and more. And during today's program, we're going to be talking about managing weeds and insects and food safety for gardeners. And then in our last segment, we're going to be talking about our crop of the month, and that's cucumbers, pickles. And here's the garden gal herself, Teresa Williams. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, George. How are you today?
Hi,
I'm doing
Teresa.
Fine.
Hi, Jelaine.
It's good to see you. And we always start our program with a word of prayer. So, Jelaine, would you get us off to a good start here?
Dear Heavenly Father, we always come to you thanking you that you love us so much. And we're thankful, Lord, that you give us an opportunity to share in a little bit of creation by being able to have plants and to plant a seed and then watch it grow. And we just pray that you'd bless this program. We're thankful for Teresa and her knowledge and her willingness to come and share information that can bless each and every one of us. We ask this in your name. Amen.
Amen. Managing weeds, those little stinkers that doesn't seem like, Teresa, you're ever done with them. You can
Never.
Go out and weed your garden, and tomorrow there's a whole new patch of them.
They like to grow. They like to grow a lot.
What's up with that?
Well, a lot of the things that we consider weeds are weeds precisely because they're very adept at growing in different conditions very quickly. And so that's why we have so many problems with them. If they stayed small, tiny little plants, well-behaved, they wouldn't cause us such an issue. But they're weeds because they're so adept at growing vigorously.
Now, Teresa, are a lot of these, we call them weeds, but aren't there a lot of herbs that are basically disguising themselves as weeds that, you know, we don't use them for any you know, way, shape, or form, but there are a number of people that are a lot wiser than I that know these plants, and they use them for different things.
Yes, George, that's a great point, because, you know, really the definition of a weed is a plant someplace where you don't want it. You know, it's not about it. It's this particular plant or that particular plant, but a plant where you don't want it. And a great example that I have of that is, I think you know, I served in the Peace Corps. And when I was working in Lesotho, we had lamb's quarters there. You know, the weed that we know as lamb's quarters. For the people there, they harvested it and cooked it like spinach. It was It was a very valuable plant. So again, your point is well taken, that sometimes what is a weed to one person is very valuable to somebody else.
And I know my wife was saying, I can't remember what the name of this weed was, but it was red and green and looked almost like a vine that was all over our garden one year. And she said, a lot of people harvest that and eat it. And I'm just kind of like, well, a lot of those people could come and harvest this and eat it all they want to anyway as we get going. And so the weeds, they compete for sunlight, water, nutrients, and other things like that with our crops.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to grow a nice, healthy crop, sometimes having those other plants, as desirable as they may be somewhere else to someone else, if you want to grow beans and you have a lot of these other plants there, they can take away from your beans' ability to grow strong and to produce. So we need to take care of those weeds in a way that allows the crops that we really want to flourish.
Now, one thing I've noticed in my wife's flower garden, she has hostas. And hostas, they grow so quickly and are so huge with the leaves, they block out any sunlight for anything else. Mm-hmm. And so are there good cover plants like that that you can use that could possibly help in this situation?
Well, if we're thinking about growing food crops, most of those are annuals, and so they're going to start off very small. What we can do to incorporate that concept of smothering weeds is, depending on your plant spacing, you can get what we call canopy closure, where the plants basically cover all of the soil surface, and most of our weed seeds get their best start if they're in full sunlight. So if we can close the canopy cover with the plants that we want, we can reduce the weed pressure that way.
Because they won't get the sunlight.
Right. And they'll still be there, but they'll be generally smaller, easier to manage if they don't have sunlight.
Now, I'm sure you can use mulch and other things like that. I've seen some of my neighbors use black plastic.
Mm-hmm.
in a variety of other things. Can you make some suggestions for our backyard gardeners there?
Sure. I'll give a number of different examples. Mulch is great, especially if it's something like spoiled hay or straw or clippings from lawn mowings, because not only are you preventing the germination of new weed seeds, you're increasing the organic matter of your soil. And that's always going to be beneficial for you. Some folks use plastic, and if you're going to use plastic, you need to make sure it's a plastic meant for that purpose, because if it hasn't been treated with some kind of UV resistance, it's just going to break down and make a horrific mess on you. So there are plastic mulches, but look for one that's meant to be used for growing something and has that UV resistance. There's also, I've seen fabric cloth that the garden center sell that they can use. You can use wood chips. Another technique that's kind of new is something called flaming, where they have tools where you basically can burn your weeds off. So you don't have to use any chemicals. They're kind of pricey to first invest in, but they sure make weeding easier.
Are they like a blowtorch?
They're kind of like a blowtorch, yeah. They spread the flame out, though. They have them on large ones that you can use behind a tractor for commercial farmers, and they also have handheld ones that I've seen for the really serious backyard grower or small farmer, because they are a bit pricey.
So, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, you're talking about a blowtorch or mm-hmm. like the little lighter things we use to light. I'm thinking, how do you know you're just getting the weed and not your plants?
Practice. You have to be really good with your aim. Because if you get your crop plant, yeah, it's going to kill the crop plant.
Okay.
And another technique that I particularly like is there's a style of hoe that's becoming more and more popular with a very thin blade. And sometimes they're called collinear hoes, not always. But if you find a hoe with a very thin blade and where the angle is such that, think about the soil and think about you're shaving the weeds off that soil. And you can do this when the weeds are tiny, and that allows you to go extremely quickly. So weeding, rather than being a long chore that takes up maybe most of your morning, you can do it very quickly with one of these new thin blade hoes.
Now, I'm George Corliss. Jelaine Fenner is here with me in our studios on Tracy Lane here in Cadillac. And we've got Good Growing with the Garden Gal, and the Garden Gal is here. Her name is Teresa Williams. Teresa, when we're talking about managing these weeds and things like that, mulches and other things like that seem to be kind of the way of choice, I guess you could say, because mm-hmm. like you said, it blocks out the sunlight, takes away, but it does make them nice and moist. It makes for good growing conditions.
It does.
But the weeds just can't make it up through there without the sunlight, right?
That's right. Basically, you're smothering the weed's ability to germinate. It just can't do it. So you do it once. It's labor intensive, maybe at the beginning of your growing season, to get all that mulch in place. But you do it once, and you have very, very few weeds the rest of the season.
Now, what about managing insects? What do we need to know? What's the ABCs of managing insects?
The first thing to do is to know what insect you're working with, because we've got a lot of beneficial insects out there, and we don't want to use a practice that's just going to indiscriminately kill everything, because we might be killing some of the things that help the crops to thrive or maybe even to pollinate. So the first thing is to learn what you've got. And, you know, this is going to sound very unscientific, but it works. If you ever use the internet and use a search engine, and let's say you've got an insect pest on your spinach, in your search engine, go to the images part of that search engine, type in spinach, type in insect pest, and see what comes up, and see if you can match a picture to the description. So you don't have to have any specialized knowledge about insects. I do that all the time myself, even with some of the specialized training I'm having, because I'm always learning new bugs, and that's incredibly helpful.
Right. I mean, if you take a picture like on your cell phone, you've got that right there, and you're right. Looking, you can compare.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
It is a great idea. And what are some of the insects that you don't want to kill when you're using, like, say, people are using a pesticide, it's wiping them all out?
Right. Ladybugs are a great friend in the garden because they eat aphids. And most of us know what an adult ladybug looks like. But not everybody knows what a ladybug larva looks like. It looks nothing like the adult. In fact, it looks kind of scary if you look at what. So if you can learn what some of your beneficial insects are, like a ladybug larva. Picture that, you know, go to a search engine such as Google, go to Google Images, look for ladybug larva, and you'll see this very bizarre looking insect, and that's one that you want to keep. We've also seen some friendly insects that eat other bugs. Sometimes on our potato beetle larva, we've seen a friendly insect. I know people who have seen them on tomato hornworms. They've seen other insects eating the tomato hornworm itself.
Is there anything that you can spray on them that would be like a natural component that would combat some of these different insects?
There's a few different options. One of the ones that's most commonly known is a soil bacteria called Bacillus thuringiensis. And that is naturally occurring. It is certified for use in organic food production. And what it does is it attacks the lining of caterpillar stomachs. So if you've got a caterpillar is feeding on the crop that you want to grow, you can use a Bacillus thuringiensis formula, and it will take care of those caterpillars that are eating the leaves. There's another one called spinosad. It's similar to a bacteria, and it's also very effective. So there are natural compounds out there if you want to use them.
And you get most of these at greenhouses or big box stores?
They can be a specialty item, and sometimes it's difficult to find them at your local place, but not always. So talk to your local garden center. Ask them what they have. They may have something available like that. They may not. They're all readily available through an online retailer, but it's good if you can shop locally and get to talk with people who know the product and can give you good advice on how to use the product.
Now, I know years ago I was told, oh, plant some little marigolds because it'll help keep bugs away. I don't know what kind of bugs, but I don't know. Is that just an old wives' tale?
I've heard marigold for rabbits, but I'm not familiar with what they might do for bugs.
Okay. Maybe they meant it was rabbits and I wasn't paying attention. But yeah, I was told that. But you need to put marigolds in your garden.
I'm not aware that they have an effect on insects.
But they'll keep the rabbit. I mean, because rabbits aren't insects, but they can ruin your garden.
You know, it all depends on how hungry that rabbit is.
Oh.
If the rabbit's just a little bit hungry, it might be a nice deterrent. If that rabbit's really hungry, they're not going to care about the marigold.
No. Okay.
I just was wondering, I heard a story about a grandmother that made a ham, and she always cut each end of the ham off, which was kind of different. And the daughter learned how to do that. Am I telling the story right?
Yep.
I think you're the one that told
that. I told you the story, yeah.
And then the granddaughter did the same thing. And then the granddaughter's husband said, why do you do that? And she says, well, I don't know. My mom taught me and grandma taught her. And so they finally went back and asked grandma. And grandma said, well, my pan wasn't big enough. So I had to cut both ends of the had nothing to do with trimming it or anything like that, of carving it or anything like that. And it's just like these marigolds.
That's a great story, George.
But that's so, it's just like these marigolds.
You got to know why you're doing something.
Yeah.
And check it out for yourself to see, does this really work?
That is really, I didn't know the marigolds, because I know we always bought marigolds. I don't know why.
Did you put them in the garden?
Yeah.
Yeah, see? So, well, at least Teresa did say it's supposed to, you know, maybe help keep the rabbits away, kind of.
But, you know, I always say, test it for yourself. Yeah. Is it going to work for you and your location?
Yeah. Not going to help our bugs,
Now, Teresa, I remember when we were kids, we were always looking for the tomato worm caterpillars, and we would feed them, and obviously they would go into a chrysalis, a pupa, and then they would hatch into these, you know, beautiful moths in the summer. And then obviously you've got your cabbage butterflies, but I'm thinking of your black swallowtails and your yellow swallowtails all feed on, you know, it could be like carrots or, you know, different things like that. And so you can't kill them all. You got to have some butterflies, right?
Yeah. And, you know, most of our native insects, many of them have a specific plant that they like to feed on. For instance, monarchs are in the news a lot these days, and they are specific feeders on milkweed. So would you spray your milkweed plant with these products? No. You would only spray a crop that you're trying to save, like you mentioned carrots. If you're having a problem with a caterpillar eating your carrots, you would only spray the carrots. And then only if you see the pest that you're concerned about. You don't spray just because you think you might get a pest, you only spray if you actually have the pest problem.
Now, we have some friends of ours that had just an infestation of potato beetles.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and they even changed the different places that they planted things, and it didn't seem to matter. They were just so bad. Is there anything that they can do besides going through? I remember they used to get my dad used to give me a can of fuel oil, you know, in a coffee can, and pick them off one at a time and stick them in the fuel oil and kill them. And that's how I was the insect deterrent. Mm-hmm. But is there anything else you can do besides that?
Yes. Yes, there is, George. Couple of things you can do. First of all is to make that crop as healthy as you can, because the healthier that crop is, the less attractive it is to an insect mm-hmm. pest. And that means giving it adequate fertility, adequate watering, starting out with healthy planting stock, and keeping the weeds down. Potatoes, especially once you hill them, and if you grow potatoes, you know you have to hill soil around the base of the plant so that it has a place to form the potatoes. A nice thick layer of straw mulch on potatoes really helps give them an even soil moisture condition, and potatoes like to be evenly moist. They don't like those fluctuations between dry and moist. So if you do that, first optimize the health of that potato plant. If you do get potato beetles after that, and frankly, most of us are going to get them. It's a very pernicious insect. It's around all the time.
You're saying get over it, move on, and do something about it.
Yeah, well, after you've done, first do the keeping the plant healthy. You're probably still going to have some potato beetles that come in. The product I spoke of a little bit earlier, spinosad, is particularly effective on potato beetles. You can, not on the beetle stage, but on the little tiny larva stage, you know, when they're smaller than one of your fingernails. And that part is key, is if you know the little bit about the life cycle of the insect that you're concerned about, find out when it's vulnerable. A potato beetle isn't vulnerable as an adult unless you're actually going to squish it or pick it off. It would take a lot of a nasty chemical to kill an adult potato beetle. But their larvae are soft-bodied, they're small, and at that point, a little bit of something much less toxic can be effective, because you found the weak point in their life cycle.
Wow, that's good to know. Well, that's our first segment, folks. You want to stick around, because in our next segment, we're going to be talking about food safety for gardeners. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with Good Growing with a Garden Gal.